John Murphy Show is on the air.
Here's into the end zone, and it is caught for the touchdown. Sammy Watkins, touchdown Buffalo. Touchdown Sammy Watkins.
Woo! Woo! It's showtime. It's go time. Let's go, baby.
Dominate on three. 1, 2, 3.
Dominate.
Let's go.
And he's going to be sacked again. He is dropped again.
The John Murphy Show, presented by NOCO, the official convenience store of the Buffalo Bills.
Tonight on the show, it's a crowded field of talent at the wide receiver spot for the Buffalo Bills. We'll talk with one of them, return specialist Marcus Thigpen, at 7:30. But we want to hear from you. How many receivers can the Bills afford to keep, and which ones will they be? Phone us up and let us know what you think. Also tonight, a look at the St. Louis drive to save the Rams for that city to prevent them from going to Los Angeles. And we'll talk with Will Brinson of CBSSports.com and take a look around the NFL.
If we're all in it, if we're all in it together, we'll win.
Live from One Bills Drive, this is the John Murphy Show, presented by NOCO on Buffalo Bills Radio.
Here we go, a Tuesday night show. We are on the air from now until 9 p.m., just in time for Game 3 of the NBA Finals, right? Well, join us tonight on the show. Thanks for tuning in, and give us a call if you would. Phone lines open, 803-0550, the number. Toll free from outside Buffalo, 1-888-550-2550. You can talk about anything. You don't have to talk about our topic. You can bring up your own, start your own topic. Let us know what's on your mind about the Bills or the NFL. We've thought about this, though, and it relates to our 7:30 guest tonight. Marcus Thigpen's going to be in studio with us at 7:30. You'll remember Marcus Thigpen for his tremendous kick return, punt return against the Green Bay Packers last December 14th, right? Really one of the great plays of the 2014 season for the Buffalo Bills. A talented special teamer. He's bounced around the league a lot, making a play to stay in this roster. But how many receivers can the Buffalo Bills keep this year? And who are they? Can you keep five? Can you keep six? If you're going to keep an extra kicker, a kickoff specialist, if you're going to follow through on what they talked about a month or so ago, keeping maybe two fullbacks, Connor and Felton, well, where are the spots going to come from? Where are they going to come from? Let us know what you think. How many receivers for this Buffalo roster, and who would they be in your mind? 803-0550, the number, or toll-free 1-888-550-2550. We are months away, and I mean at least, 3 months away? Well, 2.5 months away from real cutdown days in the NFL. But we just have 2 more days left of organized team activity this week, 3 days next week at minicamp. And then after 5 or 6 weeks, you get to training camp, and that's where really the competition begins, in the hot sun of Pittsburgh, New York, at St. John Fisher College. That's when the competition for roster spots begin, and that's when we'll talk about this a lot. I have no doubt we will revisit this issue when we get to training camp. Who are the receivers that the Bills are going to keep? We know about the talent level that's been upgraded, and that's pushed some of this talent down a little bit. But think about it. Who are the guys? I mean, Watkins, Woods, Harvin. Those three, you would think, locks. What do you do with Hogan, who had an outstanding year last year, but we know what type of receiver he is? What do you do with Marquise Goodwin, who's had problems staying on the field but has had an outstanding OTA and preseason so far? I mean, every time you talk to the coaching staff, they start raving about Marquise Goodwin and his amazing speed. What do you do with Marcus Easley, one of the best special teamers, one of the best coverman special teamers in the league? Seventh-round draft pick Desmond Lewis. Our guest tonight, Marcus Thigpen, who's got obvious return capability. There are others as well. Caleb Holly is a guy that I've liked since he's been around for the last year now. Andre Davis. Deontay Thompson, a little bit of playing time in the league. Others, Justin Brown, Tobias Palmer. 13 receivers on the roster right now. How many do they keep? Do they keep five? Do they keep six? And which ones are the ones that they keep? Give us your thoughts on that. We're just bouncing it off the wall because that's what we do. We just want to talk a little bit about the talent at wide receiver, where it appears they've got some real talent there, and how do you think it'll shake out when the cutdowns begin? 803-0550, the number to call. with your thoughts on that. Outside Buffalo, 1-888-552-550. You can reach us via Twitter at John Murphy Show or anything else you'd like to talk about regarding the Bills or the NFL. Marcus Thigpen coming up at 7:30. We'll talk about the St. Louis Rams, their future in St. Louis, with David Hunn from the St. Louis Post-Dispatch a little bit after 8 o'clock. Will Brinson from CBSSports.com joins us at 8:30. Let's start with your thoughts tonight, though. Let's start with what you think about the Bills receiving corps. Let's start with Tommy in Buffalo. Thanks for calling, Tommy. What do you think?
Hey, how you doing? I think we should keep five. I think Lewis, Goodwin, Woods, Watkins, and Hogan, that'll be enough for the team.
What about Harbin?
To get Harbin. Yeah, you're right. It is six. I'm sorry. I cannot forget about Harbin.
Okay.
That's an important piece. And just one quick point. I heard us talking about making the playoffs. And I just did something today. In the last, I'd say, about 3 years, every team has made the playoffs in our conference except for us, the Browns, Jacksonville, and obviously Tennessee, the Titans. And when I think about it, so much parity they say that's in the league. But I look at the divisions. The North takes about two every year. Now out West, you have Denver performing well. San Diego is there at least every other year. Kansas City every two. Maybe the South with the Colts, with the Texans. And I'm going to be one of those 10-6 years where we do get 10-6, but the Chiefs or that Bengals game is going to be very important. What do you think about that?
Yeah, I think you're right. I think you're right about that, Tommy. Thanks for calling. I would think that's why the Bills want to aim for more than 10. I mean, if you ask them, they'll say we need to win 16. But I don't know that 10 will I know that 10 will not guarantee it. 11, you'd be in pretty good shape. And that's why I would look for the Bills to win 11 games this year. And it's not going to be easy, obviously. I heard Mike Shope earlier in the day, and I like the way he broke it down for the in-division games. If you go against your division, if you lose just two of them, you know, I think you're in pretty good shape there, 4-2 in the division, which includes a sweep over the Jets, you would think. Then you've got the NFC East with the Giants and the Philadelphia Eagles and Washington and Dallas Cowboys. I mean, you'd like to go 3-1 against the NFC East, right? And if you do that, then all of a sudden you've got seven wins. And then you've got the AFC South. You would think you could go 3-1 against the AFC South. That will get you to 10 wins, and then you got to get one more, which means you got to get, either at Kansas City or home against Cincinnati, which I think is doable. But it's not easy to do it, but I think that's probably, if you write the script for what will put the Bills in the playoffs, that would be what you'd look for, those 11 wins there. Maybe you got another idea about that. And I think you're going to hope that it's 11 and not 10. If they're going to win 10, we'll all be sweating it out in the last couple of weeks of December, making sure they win the right 10 games. Give us your thoughts on that or on the Bills receiving core. Who's going to stick, do you think, on this wide receiving core? How many will they keep? Five of them? Six of them? Six would be a lot, especially with some of the other places where you may want to go a little bit heavy, including possibly fullback. Maybe you want to keep an extra kicker on the roster again. 803-0550, the number to call with your thoughts on that. Toll free from outside Buffalo, 1-888-552-550. Or you can do it via Twitter at John Murphy Show. A couple of tweets that have come in on this topic already. He says, all the guys that I just named, which includes the obvious suspects, Watkins, Woods, Harvin, Goodwin, Hogan. Plus, he says, this is Depro, who says, plus the seventh rounder on the practice squad. But then what about Marcus Easley? Actually, Bernie tweets in, and Easley will make the team just for special teams. I count him as a wide receiver, though. Couple of other tweets on this issue. How many receivers and who would it be? Justin Westfall tweets in order. Watkins, Harvin, Woods, Goodwin, Hogan, and Easley for special teams. Going to be a lot of talent on the practice squad. Who's he missing there? Watkins, Harvin, Woods, Goodwin, Hogan, Easley. Yeah, all right, that's six. I guess he's not missing anybody. Desmond Lewis would go to the practice squad, I guess. Justin Westfall says, am I wrong in assuming Percy Harvin will most likely be the return guy? Well, yeah, you might be. I mean, I think he's in the mix, obviously. Harvin is a dangerous return guy. He's going to get a lot of looks. Marquise Goodwin is a dangerous return guy who demonstrated that he can do it. I saw him do it in OTA practice today. Marcus Thigpen is getting kick return work right now in the OTA practices. Chris Miller tweets in, if we keep six receivers, Watkins, Woods, Harvin, Goodwin, Hogan, Easley. Jay Harris, show producer. Do you got your group, Jay, of receivers? Who do you think it'll be?
Watkins.
One.
Woods.
Two.
Hogan.
Three.
Harvin.
Four.
Easley.
Five.
Goodwin. Not in that order.
Okay.
I'm not putting it into an order, but I do think, and we've seen over the years, especially the last 2 years, the importance of special teams and the role that a guy like Marcus Easley can play. So I think it's important and beneficial if you keep somebody like that on the team, and I think you do have to count them in the wide receiver group.
Easily,
so,
yes.
So absolutely. I do see six wide receivers on the team, which I think is a heavy load. So somebody that may get put on the outside, maybe Hogan. You know, I know it's a fan favorite, but maybe he would be the odd guy looking in, I guess.
Yeah. It's a tough cut, though, right? All of them.
It's a real tough cut.
Yeah.
Because you can go down the list, but there's emphasis put on other areas on this team, specifically fullback now, that where you got to make a casualty somewhere, and where is that going to come from?
Yeah. Tough one. All right, let's get to your phone calls. Your thoughts on the Bills receiving core. How many do you keep? Who do you think they'll be? 803-0550, the number. Mountside Buffalo toll-free call at 1-888-550-2550. Mike calling from Pennsylvania. Mike, what do you think?
Hey, John. Yeah, I think it's good. The only thing that I think that everybody's forgetting about is Deontay Thompson. Now, we picked him up off Baltimore's practice squad. He has size, and he's a burner.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think Goodwin's a lock to make the roster. I think it's going to be a battle between Goodwin, Hogan. Easily, I think, is Goodwin, Hogan, and Lewis and Thompson. But my money would go for Thompson as being a dark horse because he's already been in the league. He's got size, and that's something that the Bills are, you know, they're kind of lacking right now, that size. So look for him to make plays in the training camp. But I was impressed with him in Baltimore.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a good call, Mike, and it's a good thought. I think you're right on with Deontay Thompson. I've seen him in these OTAs and these workouts in the field house the last couple of weeks make plays. He seems to have command of the offense. He seems to be able to get open. He has good size, not great size, 6'2", 203. Actually, people probably don't recall, he did play in one game last year. He played in the finale against New England last year, just the one game after being acquired early in December. But 13 games before that with the Baltimore Ravens, an undrafted rookie free agent for the Ravens in 2012 out of the University of Florida. Deontay Thompson, to me, has the stamp of a guy who could make some noise when you get to preseason games and training camp. The type of guy that's going to make a couple of plays in a preseason game and people will be saying, who's that guy? Deontay Thompson. Where did he come from? And maybe he's in the mix. I agree with you. He is obviously on the lower rung and fighting for that fifth or sixth spot, and that's going to be a battle down there for the fifth and sixth spots of receivers with, let's concede the top three anyway, Watkins, Woods, and Harvin. It's been Chris Hogan with a good year last year, Marquise Goodwin with a good camp so far, and then you got guys like Easley and Desmond Lewis and Deontay Thompson. I think you're right. And Marcus Thigpen, our guest coming up at 7:30. Tony calling in Buffalo as we kind of analyze the Bills' receiving core and that depth chart. What do you think, Tony?
Well, first of all, John, I'd like to commend you on being like the nicest talk show host.
Okay, is that a good thing? Because from what I know, you're not supposed to be nice when you do a talk show.
It's just wonderful to hear you.
The nicest talk show host.
It's nice to listen to. Even my wife says, that John Murphy's the nicest
guy. Okay.
All right. My guys are Harvin, Woods, Easley, and Watkins. Goodwin, I think he had one catch last year. The year before, he had 17 catches in 14 games. I don't see him at all. Hogan in a three wide receiver set is like playing with two wide receivers as far as I'm concerned. So take those top four. I think Easley could actually play a good part in a wide receiver set. I don't know who the other two guys are, but I don't think Goodwin and Hogan are NFL caliber receivers.
Are you selling Chris Hogan short a little bit there, Tony? I think you are. I think Chris Hogan demonstrated last year that as a slot guy, as a underneath the coverage guy, over the middle guy, he's pretty good. I'm not saying he's a game breaker at all. I'm not saying he's a make or break player, but I think he's reliable hands, reliable route runner. I think you might be selling Chris Hogan a little bit short, Tony, to be honest with you.
All right. I can't say you're wrong, but I don't think he's a very good receiver.
All right. Well, yeah, I hear what you're saying. Thanks for calling, Tony. I would not discount what Chris Hogan can do for your offense. And if you're in an offense where you want to move the chains and pick up first downs, and obviously you need speed outside. You've got it with Watkins and Robert Woods. You certainly have it with Marquise Goodwin if he's on the roster. But you also need those underneath guys. Those guys are going to pick up first downs. And I think Chris Hogan is very, very valuable in that. I think he's very valuable. He can make plays. Witness the big play against Minnesota down to the one-yard line last year, which is not to say that he's a lock for a roster spot. I don't believe he is. And you know what? If you ask him, I think he'd tell you he's not a lock for a roster spot. It's very competitive. It's competitive right now in the practices I've seen this spring at the wide receiver spot. And guys like Hogan and Deontay Thompson and our guest at 7:30, Marcus Thigpen, they're on to that. I mean, Thigpen's been cut seven times in professional football. He knows what it's all about to compete for a job, try to hang on to a roster spot. We'll talk about it with him at 7:30. Deontay Thompson, you know, released off the Baltimore Ravens. He knows what it's like to compete and to lose those training camp battles. Caleb Holly, hanging on by the skin of his teeth here last year on the practice squad. Plus the rookies, Palmer and Justin Brown, Andre Davis, Desmond Lewis. Marcus Easley, competing like heck to stay in the roster. Knows that what he does on special teams, everybody knows that. A great special teamer, one of the best in the league, but it's very competitive, and you can see it right now when you watch these spring practices. Matt calling in Buffalo. Matt, welcome to the show. Your thoughts on the Bills' wide receiving corps. What do you think?
Hey, John. I think for sure you're looking at Watkins, Woods, and Harvin, and then you can toss in Easley because he's so good on special teams. And then after that, I love Hogan, but he's kind of like Woods. He's a Woods-esque type receiver. You really need to haul a spot in on the roster with another guy similar to him. And I think maybe you hold those spots and hope that one of those tall guys, you know, those really tall guys that we don't have, that type of wide receiver, show something and take that spot.
And what do you do with Goodwin? Do you have a spot for Goodwin on your roster, Matt?
Only if he can do and be productive at the return abilities. Because I don't know if you're going to want to throw Harvin out there all the time to do that. So you're going to need somebody else back there that's capable.
And there are other – let's face it, there are other candidates for return work, including Leotis McKelvin, including Ronald Darby, the rookie, you know, that might be the best way he can get on the field this year. So you make two good points there about Goodwin. And you said only if he can be productive in the return game. And the other caveat I would put out there for Marquise Goodwin is, can he stay healthy? Because that's been an issue now with Marquise Goodwin. Very good point. And all, your point on Woods and Hogan doing the same thing is very well made too, Matt. And I go back to last August training camp. That was the battle, the slot receiver, between Robert Woods and Chris Hogan. And they each brought different things to it. But I remember talking to Doug Marone. It was Fisher, so it wasn't it was fairly deep into training camp. It was probably before the third preseason game because we had an extra long camp last year. And I remember talking to him at length one night at camp about what he needs out of that slot receiver spot, what he was getting from Woods. You remember? I mean, a year ago, the narrative was they weren't happy with Robert Woods. They wanted him to compete for that slot receiver spot. Chris Hogan won the slot receiver spot over Robert Woods last year. Now, they managed to get Robert on the field quite a bit, but you might be onto something there when you say that Woods and Hogan, at least in the eyes of last year's coaching staff, when you say that Woods and Hogan are similar. And by similar, similar roles, let's say. Maybe can fit similar roles. They have different skill sets. That's a couple of interesting points there. Thank you. Let's go to Michael in Auburn. Michael, your thoughts on the Bills receiving corps?
My thoughts are Chris Hogan is a beast, man. The gentleman who called about two callers ago didn't think Hogan had what it takes to stick in the NFL. I'm telling you, that guy catches everything thrown at him. You want a Julian Edelman-type guy in your offense? He's the guy. He's a lacrosse player. He's a stud. He's a great athlete. Every time I've seen this kid, even when he was a nobody, and I was watching the Bills practice, I'm like, who is this Hogan kid? Hogan? Who's Hogan?
Yeah.
I'm telling you got to keep him on the squad, Murph. Your thoughts on this?
All right, Michael, thanks. Good point. Yeah, the one thing I love, and I've been around so long that I've seen it happen several times, I love when players get better. I love when guys make themselves into players. And when Chris Hogan got here off the Dolphins, I think was he a practice squad guy in the Dolphins? I believe he was, now 3 years ago. You know, he was kind of a smallish curiosity, but quite frankly, you know, he was 7'11", made his name as the 7'11 character on Hard Knocks with the Dolphins that year. He's made himself into a player. He is big. He is strong. He is consistently solid in terms of route running. I love when that happens. Does he have a lock on a roster spot? I don't think so, and I think he knows it more than anyone, more than any of us know. But I love when guys get better, and I love that part of Chris Hogan. And there are other guys like that, too, but I love to watch guys who stick with it and get better. A call here from Mark in New Jersey. Mark, your thoughts on the Bills' wide receiving core.
How you doing, John? I think the way they're going to use the tight ends and the running backs is only room for five this year, to be honest with you. And I think probably Hogan would be the odd man out just because they have Clay, O'Leary, they're going to use the backs as receivers too. It's just like you're going to have a lot of guys running those little short intermediates, and then Goodwin has that stretch. He has functional speed. We saw it. And last year he was marginalized by Marrone for whatever reason, like a lot of guys were.
Yeah.
He had a big catch, one catch, but still, like, that's Olympic speed. You can't invent that. And you're going to need that to make defenses back up. Not to say the other receivers aren't fast that they have.
Right. Yeah, that's a really good point, too. Really good point, Mark. And you can see, if you watch some of these OTAs, you can see how they use Charles Clay. And he does line up as a wide receiver. Some of the backs, McCoy, maybe even Fred Jackson could line up in that spot as well. And maybe that does mean, what, five receivers in your mind, Mark? Is that what you're thinking?
Five receivers, you know, easily, obviously, special teams and the other four, the main base guys.
Watkins, Woods, Harvin, and Goodwin, yeah. All right, good point, Mark. Thanks very much. Here's a call from Mark in Rochester. Mark, go ahead. Your thoughts on the wide receiving core.
Yeah, I was actually just this was just brought up, but Marcus Easley, I feel like, is a solid lock, and not particularly for the wide receiver position, but he definitely needs to be on that roster just for special teams purposes. I mean, when this guy's healthy, you watch him play the game. He'll get downfield. He's the first guy down the field every single time on a kickoff or a punt. Making a tackle or at least stopping somebody. So I think he needs to find a spot on the roster as long as he could stay healthy.
Okay. Thanks very much, Mark. Yeah, I'm a big Marcus Easley fan, and I know what he can do on special teams. Mark Kelso and I regularly laugh sometimes on special teams plays, punt coverage, kick coverage, when Marcus Easley is consistently making tackles downfield. If they only keep five, and if he's one of the five, then he's going to have to be ready to play receiver and may have to play. So, you know, keep that in mind. And, you know, they could keep just five. Again, the earlier callers mentioned the flexibility they intend to have when it comes to tight ends, maybe even some of the backs, maybe even at fullback, having a little more flexibility there. So, you know, the numbers, I think, are fluid. You would think it's going to be five at least, but maybe not. Let's go to Mike in Toronto. Mike, your thoughts on the Bills' wide receiving core.
Thanks for the line, John. And I agree with almost everybody else's call. I love the depth at wide receiver, but I think it's there on defense. It's there at almost every position except O-line and quarterback, and kind of takes me back to the Bills of the 90s. And guy went down, another guy came in the lineup, stepped up, filled a void, and I kind of think that's what this year's Bills team has, that the sneaky advantage that we're good at almost every position. And I think that's exciting. It's never a bad thing.
Not a bad thing. You're right, Mike. Thanks for calling. Chris Brown and I were standing there watching the OTAs today and watching the second team defense. We're talking about receivers, obviously. Second team defense out there. Defensive line. Carrington, Stephon Charles, Jarius Wynn. You can play with those guys. You can play with that group in the NFL. All of them have had moments in the NFL. That's pretty good depth on the defensive line and very good depth at wide receiver. Frank calling from Gettysville about the Bills wide receivers. What do you think, Frank?
Yeah, hey, John, I'd like to definitely keep Goodwin. Let me tell you why, because especially if Tyrod wins the starting quarterback job, you know, I could picture him scrambling and then, you know, somehow Goodwin gets open and he could take it downtown. And I just, you know, I like this theme of building team speed, and I actually think that we might have the fastest team in the league, and I just would like to keep that Olympic speed.
All right. Thanks, Frank. You're right about the speed. Our guest coming up in a minute here, Marcus Thigpen, very fast, another track star from his days at Indiana University. Goodwin, obviously, a world-class speed. Ronald Darby, tremendous speed. Yeah, there's some speed on this roster. Tyrod Taylor, many people believe the fastest quarterback in the NFL. Hey, one ticket announcement today by the Buffalo Bills, and this is big. Individual game tickets. There are, as of today, no tickets available for the first three home games of the year. Can you believe that? On June 9th, no tickets available, the Bills say, for the Indianapolis Colts, New England Patriots, and New York Giants games. 1, 2, and 3, first three home games of the year, going up to the Giants game on October 4th. The reason, the high demand, including the pre-sale of individual game tickets to season ticket members, which has been going on for a couple of weeks. Now, if you want to buy a season ticket, you can still do that and get tickets, seats for those games, Indy, New England, and the Giants. But there are no individual tickets available for the first three home games now, Colts, Patriots, and Giants games. Season tickets are available for purchase, and that includes all 10 home games at Ralph Wilson Stadium. For more ticket information, go to BuffaloBills.com or call 1-877-BB-TIX. But don't be looking for individual game tickets for those first three, Indy, New England, and the New York Giants. They're gone. Other than season tickets, they are gone. Pretty amazing. Folks have responded to what this team is all about. They could be on their way to selling out the season, ladies and gentlemen. All right, we're going to talk more about the receivers. We're going to talk with one of the receivers when we return. Marcus Thigpen, the author of that tremendous punt return touchdown that sort of lit the fire against the Green Bay Packers last December. He'll be in studio with us, Marcus Thigpen, when we return. It is the John Murphy Show presented by NOCO. Tonight, we're live from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show on Buffalo Bills Radio.
Here goes Thigpen on the run at the 40, 45 in midfield. Marcus Thigpen into Green Bay territory at the 25, at the 20, headed for the end zone at the 10, 5, touchdown! Marcus Thigpen, touchdown! Buffalo, unbelievable! Well, there's the play, really the play of the game and the victory over the Green Bay Packers last December. And the guy who ran it back is in studio with us right now, wide receiver Marcus Thigpen. Thanks for coming by, Marcus.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
One of my favorite moments of the 2014 season, your touchdown play.
Yes, sir.
You think about that very much?
I do. I think about it all the time. That's, you know, it was a big play for me, big play for the team. It was a big win for us. So, you know, just looking back at that game, it just gave me confidence going into this year, too, as well. So I just, you know, I like looking at the positive things and obviously the negative things as well, so I can get better at, but that was definitely a big play and helped me out a lot, helped the team out.
That was probably the biggest win of the year for the Bills, and when you think about it, I thought Green Bay was like the best team in the league when they came in. Mm-hmm. Defense, Buffalo defense was playing its usual solid game. Packers had just kicked a field goal, so the Bills are down 3-0. A play like that can sort of change, you know this because you're a special teamer, can sort of change the whole outlook on a game, can't
definitely,
it?
Definitely, yeah. You know, it gives you that instant spark, you know what I mean? A lot of things weren't going our way on offense. Defense was definitely doing a great job, so, you know, coaches telling me, you know, we need to play from you. Fred Jackson was telling me the same thing. You know, he says it's going to come down to you. So I just tried my best out there. You know, I caught it and saw a lot of green grass and took it and took off.
As I remember it, you cut to the left and then found room over the right. Kind of ran almost all the way across the field to get up there. Huh?
Yep, sure did.
You had done that before, and actually for the Dolphins, didn't you return a kickoff for a touchdown here, or was that in
Miami? I did.
It was here.
Leotis. He scored a punt return touchdown.
Same game, yeah.
And, you know, I had to come right back with the kickoff return.
Yeah.
So it was an exciting game. You know, once he did it, I was like, you know, I got to do something now. You know, it's a competition you're going on, you know.
What you, Leo, Goodwin, a couple of others, do you guys have some sort of a bond as return specialist? I mean, it's a rare thing to have in this league, a speed guy like yourself. You guys talk at all about technique when it comes to returning?
Oh, yeah, definitely. We know it's a business, but at the same time, we are teammates. You know, we all helping each other out. Even if we're not here all on the same team, you know, we can definitely help out elsewhere, you know. So we all great friends, me, Leo, Percy, you know, a new addition here. So we all just helping one another.
We're in studio with Marcus Thigpen, Bills return specialist and wide receiver. You came here, I think, just a couple of days after the Jets win. It was late November.
Yeah.
And how hard is it to jump on board a train, you know, that's moving at full speed down the tracks to jump in the middle of the season like that?
It was kind of tough. You know, it was rough. My decision at first, you know, I was ready to wrap it up. You know, we talked about this last year.
Yeah.
I had just went through a couple cuts with Miami, New England, Tampa, and then, you know, finally got here. And, you know, coach was saying, you know, we're gonna play you right away. A return game is not as bad. You know, it's just learning the offense is hard. So just going out there, knowing which way to go, you know, it's pretty much the same everywhere you go. So just getting familiarized with the players and how coach wants things done. You know, that was the hardest part.
I was looking at your 2014 season, Patriots practice squad, Miami practice squad, where you had played before that, Tampa Bay on the active roster for four games. Mm-hmm. And when you were released by Tampa, what were you going to do if you weren't going to come back to football?
I was just try to find a job. My kids are tired of me being gone. You know what I mean? Yeah. My wife is tired of it. So I was just probably going to try to find a job and, you know, just do something where I can be at home and not have to stress and worry where I'm going to be and getting cut. You know, it's just a lot to go into it. You know what I mean? Yeah. And people don't really understand the sacrifices that we have to make, you know, from our families when we leave. But, you know, I was at a point where I was ready to wrap it up. And my wife told me, you know, just give it one more try. You know, you didn't come this far for no reason, you know. So, you know, I decided to go with it, and it's working out well so far.
What are you, 29 years old, Mark?
29, yes, sir. I just turned 29.
How many kids?
Five kids? 5 kids.
Yeah, yes. You've been married for a while then?
Been married for 6 years. Been doing my wife off and on for 14 years since high school, you know, so we've been through a lot together.
You grew up in Detroit, right?
Yes,
your wife from Detroit?
From Detroit. We both from Detroit, went to high school together, yep.
What was the decision making that went into going to college football in Indiana? I mean, you probably were the Big Ten growing up in Detroit, but why Indiana at that time?
That was kind of like the biggest school, you know, coming out of Detroit. It was hard for players to get looks. So
why is that?
We just didn't get a lot of publicity there. Yeah. You know, our city wasn't doing well, you know.
It's viewed as a basketball city.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, I had a lot of small schools, you know, the MAC, the WAC, but I was wanting to do something bigger. You know, if I had good numbers, and Indiana was like the biggest school that came. So, you know, I wanted to go Big Ten. So if I couldn't go to Michigan, because I just love Michigan, being from there. You know, so just going to Indiana, you know, that was a big decision.
And you come out of Indiana undrafted really struggled to find a job in the NFL for a couple of years, right?
I came out as a free agent with the Eagles, went through training camp with them, and went to Denver right after that. Got released from there, then went to CFL, Saskatchewan Rough Riders, got released from them, and then went to Hamilton, played for 2 years, finally made a name for myself, then to Miami, and then all the things that we talked about leading up to this point.
I know how you made a name for yourself in Hamilton. I came across this. You scored in one season a touchdown 5 different ways.
Yes, sir.
How'd you do it? I mean, what do you have? Kick return, punt return?
Yeah, it was kick return, rushing, punt return, missed field goal, receiving, and rushing.
Okay.
Because you know you can return the field goal kickoff. So,
Wow, that's pretty amazing. No one's ever done that before in the CFL.
No, sir.
How did you like that experience playing in Hamilton, playing in the CFL?
It was different. You know, it was different. But I liked it. I liked it a lot. It was football. You know, it was a little different. The 3 downs and 12 players, and the field was a lot bigger. The waggle motion, what they call it, where you can run before the snap to get a head start. But you know, overall, it was still football, and it was fun. Great experience. You know, I learned a lot, met a lot of nice people, and just had an opportunity to play. So I'm thankful for that.
You're pretty close to Hamilton. Have you been back since you've been here?
I have. I went back a few times to go see the athletic trainer. You know, she still take care of me a little bit. You know, doing my my maintenance work for my body. So.
And have you come across? We have a Western New Yorker, Tasker, Luke Tasker, who's Steve Tasker's son, who played here. He's leading receiver for Hamilton.
I know. Yeah. You know, I haven't came across him, but I know exactly what you're talking about.
We're in studio with Marcus Thigpen, wide receiver. You were not always a wide receiver, right? You were listed as a running back,
yes,
right?
Yes, sir. I've been a running back. I switched last year, so it's a learning process. And I'm still learning running back stuff as well, just in case, you know, just in case they want to pit me, you know, in the backfield as a scat back. So. But the receiver position, it's not bad. It's just a lot of learning.
What's the most difficult part of that adjustment, running back to wide receiver, for you?
Most difficult is just learning all the positions as a receiver, the slots, the outsides, and knowing all the different routes, knowing the coverages. Whereas opposed to being a running back, you know, you see everything right in front of you. All you got to really look at is the D line and linebackers, and that's all you really have to worry about. So, you know, it's a little adjustment, but it's not as bad as I thought it was going to be.
Getting off the line of scrimmage, is that a struggle for you, or do you think that's something you need to learn, or how does that, you know, getting away from press coverage?
It's not a struggle. I wouldn't say it's a struggle, but it's definitely some things I can work on, you know, to get better at it. You know, just working on my hands, having fast hands, and using my speed and my quickness to get off. So it's a learning process. I just got to learn how to put it all together.
And where do you find time to learn running back things and to work with the running backs here? Do you go to meetings with them?
No, I actually do it on my own.
On your own?
Yeah.
Okay.
You know, we got the iPads to do our studying. So when I'm done studying with the receiver stuff, I just go and check out some running back stuff as well.
And when is that? At night during these OTAs? You do stuff
on
your own?
Yeah, I do it back when I'm at, because I'm staying at the hotel, so I do it back there.
This is serious. I mean, people think it's springtime, it's summer, it's not football season. Yeah. It is football season for you, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. Yeah. You know, it almost feels like a mini camp for us, you know what I mean? We're coming in, the days go by fast, you're right back at it early the next morning, you know, so... I mean, but it's part of our job. It's part of the business. So, you know, I'm excited for it.
How, this is probably not a stat that you keep track of, but how many times have you been released? 8, 10?
I want to say at least 7.
Seven times?
7, yeah.
Does it still hurt when it happens? I mean, it happened to you a couple times.
I mean, it doesn't hurt as bad, you know what I mean? But it still stings, you know what I mean?
Because
you know, you've been there. You've done it. You know what you can do. You know, I've had success in this league. And just to get released, it's like a slap in the face, you know, but... you know, I just keep pushing forward.
All those times, did any team handle it particularly well that you thought, okay, I feel okay about that?
Or you know, not really. I mean, they all handled it the same way.
Yeah.
You know, they say it's a numbers game and you know, we can't use you right now at this time. You know, you've done everything that, you know, we asked of you. It's the same old song.
Are they reading off a script, you think?
I mean, it's the same thing, so I'm pretty sure they all just, they tell everyone that, you know, but I know what it really, really is, you know what I mean?
And do you hear what they're saying, or do you just sit there and go, yeah, okay, I know where this is going?
Yeah, I mean, I know where it's going, but at the same time, I hear what they're saying. Because, you know, it is some true, genuine people, you know, in the league, you know. So I do hear them out, you know. But at the end of the day, it's the same thing that's going to happen.
Marcus Thigpen is in studio with us. Bill's a wide receiver, return specialist. We talked about the return game for a moment, and as many return guys who were here last year, including you and Goodwin and Leo, then they go out and add Percy Harvin. I mean, the competition gets a little bit tougher all of a sudden.
It does. And, you know, I'm excited about it. You know, I like competition. I feel like Percy and Goody, we all can help the team out in different ways as well. So hopefully we can find a way where we all can stay, you know, because I think we'll be lethal, you know, if we all can stay and use all of our attributes to this team.
Is there a difference in style among that group, Goodwin, Harvin, you, Leo, in terms of return work?
I think we all have our own style. It's a lot of speed. You know, a lot of agility, and we all have our own unique style in similar ways, though.
You could put together a heck of a 4x100 team with Darby in the mix, with and with Goodwin. I mean, it's pretty. There's some track stars on this roster.
We do have a fast team.
Yeah. Marcus, tell me about the receiver spot and the competition there. Harvin competes there as well.
Yes,
it's, again, a crowded field when you look at who played last year and who was on the roster last year and adding a guy like Percy Harvin.
Yeah, it's definitely crowded, you know. But the thing is, we just got to make plays to stand out. You know, we're doing a lot of we're doing two offense sets, so we can get a lot of reps, get a lot of looks. So, you know, at the end of the day, we just got to see who's, you know, making the most plays, doing their job, learning their assignments, and being consistent with it, you know. So, you know, it's going to be tough.
All that competition, how much, if at all, do you worry about getting enough reps, getting enough looks, getting enough returns to handle in preseason games?
I mean, right now I'm not worried, you know, if once we get closer to the season, you know, if my reps aren't where, you know, I want them to be, then I will be a little worried. But as of right now, you know, we're all getting a lot of reps. So, like I said, I just want to make the best of it and just try to impress the coaches enough to let them know that I deserve to be here.
What keeps you going?
For one, my family. You know, my family my son looks up to me a lot. You know, he loves football. You know, he want to see me be successful. My friends, you know, everyone that's been in my corner, it's been in my life through, you know, the whole process, you know, that keeps me going. And just, I love the game, you know what I mean? I love coming out here, getting better, learning new things, and I want to win. You know, I feel like we got a great team here to do that this year.
We wish you luck. Thanks for coming by
the
studio
today. Appreciate you
having
me.
Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Marcus Thigpen, Bills wide receiver, return specialist in studio with us. The John Murphy Show presented by NOCO from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.
Is the John Murphy Show on Buffalo Bills Radio.
Thanks again to Marcus Thigpen for joining us in studio tonight. Good guy, root for him. He's part of that crowded field of receivers we talked about in the first few minutes of the show, and we will continue to talk about moving forward here. If you have any thoughts on that, how many receivers do the Bills keep when they make the final roster up in August, early September? And who would they be? 803-0550. Outside Buffalo, toll-free number at 1-888-550-2550. You can do it via Twitter at John Murphy Show. A couple of tweets on this. Mo Mejhi tweets in, the Bills have depth at almost every position except O-line and quarterback. Embarrassment of riches is never a bad thing. Alex Jones tweets in order, Watkins, Harvin, Woods, Goodwin, Lewis, Easley. That's six. Hogan special teams duties taken over by Carlos Williams. Okay. Desmond Lewis, he's got on the roster. What else? John Jones tweets in, hopefully seven. That's a lot. He says, I hope Goodwin makes it. This coaching staff seems so much better, and they would take advantage of his speed. I will say this. They like Marquise Goodwin a lot, and the vibe I'm getting is that they're extremely impressed by what Goodwin has shown through these workouts so far. Now, keep in mind, these are non-contact, no-pads workouts. But that being said, Marquise Goodwin has been a standout through the first couple of weeks of these OTAs. Two more OTAs this week, three mandatory minicamps coming up next week for the Buffalo Bills. Speaking of mandatory minicamps, six teams open theirs today. The Cardinals, the Broncos, the Colts, the Jets, the Raiders, and the 49ers. So it is a mandatory attendance now. The players can be fined for skipping out, according to the collective bargaining agreement. There are a lot of rules on these minicamps, but it's a new phase of the offseason. And as we said, the Bills get into theirs next week, six teams into theirs mandatory minicamps this week, today. Teams can hold two practices on two of the three minicamp days. One of them must be a walkthrough. No on-field session can last longer than 2.5 hours, and they cannot be on the field more than 3.5 hours in one day. No contact work, no live blocking, tackling, or physical coverage. So the mini camps underway at six different teams right now. The Bills start theirs next week, next Tuesday. And this note from around the NFL, Tavares Jackson, remember him, spent a year here with the Buffalo Bills, backup quarterback. Looks like he's going to be back with Seattle. They have agreed to re-sign the veteran to backup Russell Wilson. He spent the last two seasons in Seattle. They only had R.J. Archer on the roster behind Russell Wilson. The Seahawks hoped all along to bring back Tavares Jackson. He started 14 games for Pete Carroll back in 2011 after spending his first five seasons with Minnesota. He met with the Dolphins this offseason, but all along they thought that Tavares Jackson would be back with the Seahawks. And so there he goes, back with the Seattle Seahawks. All right, 1 hour done. Next hour, we will continue our discussion about the Bills' receiving core. How many receivers do they need? Who will they be? Phone lines open, 803-0550, the number, or toll-free, 1-888-550-2550. Also, next hour, we'll talk with David Hunt of the St. Louis Post-Dispatch about the future of the Rams in St. Louis. And we'll talk with Will Brinson of the CBS Sports Crew about the NFL issues as well. One more hour. Stick around. The John Murphy Show presented by NOCO from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.
Halftime is over. We're back with more of the John Murphy Show, presented by NOCO.
Keep spilling your blood for one another. Let's go get it now. Let's go. Bills on three. One, two, three. Bills.
Safety. 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 Unbelievable.
The John Murphy Show, presented by NOCO, the official convenience store of the Buffalo Bills.
That safety is from the Green Bay game, too, right? Isn't it? Yeah.
It was a game of highlights, yeah. John.
Can I hear the thick bend in the highlight again when you get a chance? Is that doable?
Yeah.
Cool. That was my – the New England game was great last year in October, but that Packers game coming when it did, really, for me, the highlight of the season. Good evening. Welcome back. 1 hour to go. The John Murphy Show presented by NOCO. You know, last week we talked a little bit about the fate of the San Diego Chargers with some of the people who are trying to keep the Chargers in San Diego. It's a full court press now by the folks in Los Angeles on a couple of different fronts. Oh, here it is. Are you ready?
Sorry, I had the volume up. I don't know what I'm doing.
Well, let's do that.
You want to hear it?
Yes, let's dispense with that. This is Marcus Thigpen against punt return that you heard last hour, but it's such
and
a great
you
moment.
Heard 2 seconds ago, and you're going to hear it again.
Two
ready?
Seconds ago? Yeah, go ahead. Yeah.
Maste into punt, kick in the air, fielded at the 26-yard line. Here goes Thigpen on the run at the 40, 45 at midfield. Marcus Thigpen into Green Bay territory at the 25, at the 20, headed for the end zone at the 10, 5, touchdown! Marcus Thigpen, touchdown! Buffalo, unbelievable!
All right, let's critique your work.
I'm not worried. I just like to hear Thigpen do that. That was great. At any rate, receivers, we're talking about that. Is there a role for Marcus Thigpen to play on this Bills roster? Give us a call. Let us know what you think about the receiving core. How many do they keep? Who are they? 803-0550 is the number. Toll-free, 1-888-550-2550. A couple of people have tweeted in already. Orlando Weesey on the receivers. Watkins Wood. Are you all right?
I'm losing
you
it
need
over
the
here. I don't
maneuver?
Know what's
what do
going
you need
on.
Over
I need to figure out not to bring my mic up, not to bring up the computer mic.
on-the-job training here.
Yeah, I guess so.
Orlando Weese, Watkins, Wood, Harvin, Easley, Andre Davis is his dark horse, and a toss-up between Goodwin and Hogan. That's his wide receiving core. John Jones, probably keep six, but I hope seven. Don't want to see Tom Brady thrown to one of our guys next year. Scott Polachek, six is the standard, four is wide receiver, two for special teams is depth. I don't know about that. I don't know if the standard applies. Gordon Arbor, I would keep six. Seven would really be pushing it. I agree. And Vince Guarino, I think they keep six wide receivers. Watkins, Harvin, Woods are definite. Hogan and Easley should stay. Solid special teamers, number six. Well, who is that? Is that Easley? Is that who you're thinking of? Is that a good one for the return work? It's an interesting question, I think. The Bills' wide receiving core, how many do you keep and who are they? Give us a call and throw in your 2 cents. 803-0550, the number, or toll-free from outside Buffalo, 1-888-550-2550. I said a moment ago, before we were derailed about the push is on to get an NFL team in Los Angeles, maybe more than one. Last week we talked with the folks in San Diego. We're going to get an update on the Rams situation in just a few minutes with David Hunn, who covers the stadium construction issue for the St. Louis Post-Dispatch. You know, that stadium in St. Louis is only 20 years old, and it's already, I guess, it's already substandard. They got to replace it. Pretty amazing. When I looked outside a few minutes ago at a, 42-year-old stadium that's been refurbished a couple of times and is in pretty good shape, good to go for a little while longer. Right over here in Orchard Park, but whatever. We'll talk about the St. Louis situation. Do the Rams, with their owner openly building a stadium, and you know they've demolished the site now, the Hollywood Park racetrack site. They have to move, right? I mean, the owner owns the land. The owner's building a stadium. What other options are there? We'll talk about that. Will Brinson's going to join us at the bottom of this hour. He covers the NFL for CBSSports.com. He's got some thoughts on stuff going on around the National Football League. But you have time to phone in your thoughts on what's going on with the Bills receiving corps. And Jay Harris and I, our show producer, talking about there are a couple of more, not all, but a couple of more position groups that we should address as the OTAs and minicamps wind down here over the next week or so. Quarterback, that's obvious. Running back, what is that depth chart going to look like at the end of a training camp, you know, the beginning of the season? That's a difficult call. Linebacker, I think there's some question marks there. Defensive backfield, I think a lot of question marks there. So there are some issues on some other roster spots. Not all. I mean, you can pretty much pick your defensive lineman now, I would think. You could pretty much, you know, your offensive line, I guess we don't know who's going to line up where. And when you get past the starters, I don't know that there's a high level of recognition when it comes to who's who on the offensive line. Tight ends, I think there's some interesting questions there, although the numbers are not as great. But I think can they get by with two tight ends and maybe use Felton or somebody else? John Connor is a wingback type. Can they get by with two? I don't know. Can they get by with, you know, do they need all the specialists that they had a year ago? Do they need those two kickers and a punter? Interesting roster questions. We'll address them moving forward in the next week or two, and then, of course, revisit them when we get to training camp. Here's a call from Joe in Charlotte, North Carolina. Joe, go ahead. You're on the air.
Yeah, John, I wanted to get your opinion. You know, we had the kickoff specialist Jordan Gay last year. You know, Marone's big thing was, hey, he's got to get 80% worth of touchbacks. But, I mean, Carpenter's got a big leg. I mean, obviously, you know, 60-yard field goals. Are we really worried about what's he going to do, 60, 70% touchbacks? So for that little bit of margin, is it worth keeping him on the roster and only being able to keep five receivers rather than going six?
It's an interesting question, Joe. It's a luxury, isn't it, to have a kickoff specialist? It worked for the most part last year, and I think they got good production out of Jordan Gay, but it is a luxury. We know what Dan Carpenter can do on the kickoffs. They, you know, last year's coaching staff apparently didn't feel like it was enough for them, but that's one spot that you'd have to keep an eye on if you want to go deep at receiver or running back or tight end or even fullback like they talk about. I think the kickoff specialist is an area where you'd have to keep an eye on moving forward.
And now, the Subway Fresh Take Hotline. Subway, eat fresh.
Future of the NFL in St. Louis. We talked last week about the future of the NFL in San Diego, but what about St. Louis, where they lost their team to Arizona, then got the Rams back about 20 years ago. Joining us on the Subway Fresh Take Hotline, a guy who's been keeping an eye on developments in St. Louis, in particular the stadium developments there, reporter from the St. Louis Post-Dispatch, David Hunn. David, thank you very much for coming on the air with us tonight. We appreciate it.
Yeah, happy to be here.
Hey, David, I was looking today after we booked you as a guest. That current stadium, Edward R. Jones Dome, that's 20 years old.
Yeah.
It's only 20 years old.
Yeah.
Is it not functional anymore? Does it not work for the NFL anymore?
You know, that's a really good question. I mean, that's definitely in the eye of the beholder. What happened, you know, from the layman's perspective, it feels a little outdated, okay? I mean, I was in there, recently, and it feels a little bit like, a movie theater.
Yeah.
I think is probably the best description. You know, especially when you're up high, it's a dome,
yeah.
And it doesn't have all the bells and whistles. So it feels, you know, especially when you stack it up against these new stadiums, it definitely feels outdated. Now, that said, you know, this was a very formal process they went through where arbitrators ruled that, by these specific points, it wasn't up to date. Those, some of those things had to do with things that we care about, but some of them, you know, we're a little more arcane, so to speak.
Did somebody make a bad lease deal when the Rams first came there 20 years ago? I mean, to have the out
yeah.
clause that they did, that they have, that, what, it's got to be that certain standards has to be in the top, what,
right.
10% of the league or something. Was that a bad deal for the,
right.
the folks in St. Louis?
Yeah, I mean, you can't find a person in St. Louis who says it was a good deal. Even folks who cut it, I think, are beginning to scratch their heads or maybe have long scratched their heads. I mean, you know, remember, I suppose to give them their fair shake, at that point, there was no team in St. Louis.
Right.
So they were competing to get a team, a very different situation than they're in now, where they have a team, even if we all know that Stan Kroenke, the owner of St. Louis Rams, wants to leave for Los Angeles. I mean, owns the land, is building a stadium. We know he wants to go. But it's still a very, very different predicament that the city's in now in comparison to what it was 20 years ago. But yeah, you're absolutely right. Almost everyone would say it was a bad deal. I mean, the deal required the city and the area, the state and the county, to make sure that the dome is in the quote-unquote top tier
yeah.
of stadiums across the NFL, always, you know, at every, like, 10-year interval. And, that's like, the team didn't have to add anything. I mean, there was no outline of who would pay for this upgrade, so it was just a constant requirement for the stadium to be the best, which is darn near impossible. I mean, you know what's going on in Dallas and New Jersey and elsewhere.
Our guest is David Hunn, who covers the stadium issue in St. Louis for the St. Louis Post-Dispatch. It is a stadium issue, right? I know there are plans in the works, and that are, in fact, the governor has got a pretty ambitious plan to build a stadium. And if they get that stadium built, can they really move the Rams out of St. Louis, David?
Yeah, that's such a good question. Everybody's asking that same thing. I mean, you know, at the end of the day, well, so here's what we know. The NFL has rules. When you're a member of the association, when you own a team and you're an owner, there are rules on when you can move and how you can move. And one of those rules says that you have to – the owner, before an owner can move a team, they have to make every effort they can to keep the team in the home market. Well, that's a rule that St. Louisans look to with hope, but it's also a rule that's in the eye of the beholder. You know, what has Stan Kroenke done to keep the team in Los Angeles? Faux pas there. To keep the team in St. Louis. I mean, he would say that he tried to get the city to understand they needed to upgrade the stadium, and they just wouldn't listen. And then he won the arbitration. So he'll say that he did try to keep the team there, and the city failed, and now it's too late. The city, on the other hand, is going to say, you're not even sitting at the table with us. You won't even talk about options now. How is that fair?
Yeah.
But when it comes down to it, this is a decision of 32 owners sitting in a room, and they're going to decide. You know, no matter what the NFL staff says, this is an owner's decision at the end.
David, you have tried to pursue Mr. Kroenke, haven't you? I've read about an account you wrote at the owners' meetings in March where you really couldn't get much out of him. In fact, he's always been sort of a shadowy, mysterious figure, and maybe even more so now with the stadium issue and the future of the football there in St. Louis in question.
Yeah, you know, I had fun with that. I don't want to pretend like I was all bent out of shape about it. We all know that Stan doesn't like talking to reporters, and that's been a longstanding, you know, folks in Missouri call them silent stand.
Yeah.
Now, I always say, as a reporter, until you prove that to me, I'm not going to call you that.
Yeah.
And I don't know if he did. I mean, the truth is that he was actually kind of cordial. He would not sit down for an interview. So I did not get a chance to get his side of the story. But he was, you know, he's kind of a dashing figure. I mean, he's not the nerdy, recluse that I think sometimes he is painted to be. He is a sharp dressing, but very private and very business oriented man. I mean, he's a businessman, right? He wants to make money off this deal. All indicators say that's how he's operating.
How awkward is it to have him building the stadium in Los Angeles while the folks in St. Louis talk about building a stadium to keep that team in St. Louis?
Yeah, I don't know if I'd use the word awkward. I mean, it's maddening for some people.
Yeah.
I mean, people really don't like Stan Kroenke in St. Louis. I mean, if he didn't talk before and that irritated him, now, he's moving the team without saying that he's moving the team. I mean, it's just very frustrating for Rams lovers. I'll say this, too. I can't believe the number of people who love the Rams, the St. Louis Rams. I mean, I've never had so many people come out of the woodwork and call me and tweet at me and email me and saying how much they love the Rams. They really dig this team, and they really don't like Kroenke. They're really mad at him for leaving or for suggesting he might leave.
Yeah, and you mean St. Louis residents feel that way, or even from outside St. Louis?
Well, I mean, St. Louis is, you know, the largest town in Missouri. It's the largest metropolitan area in Missouri. And the Rams fans spread much wider, obviously, than just St. Louis. I mean, they go across the Mississippi River into Illinois.
Right.
I mean, Rams fans go 50 miles or more, 100 miles, both directions. You know, plenty of Rams fans in Illinois, southern Illinois, as they're, you know, we're about 5 hours south of Chicago. And once you hit a certain point, it's all Cardinals Rams fans.
Yeah.
You go farther north and it's, you know, Bears, Cubs, White Sox.
David, how far along is the stadium proposal in St. Louis, and how confident are you that they'll get a stadium built?
Well, I'm not confident at all. I still think it's, I mean, everybody asks me, and I think it's very 50-50, but that's not my job, right? The guys who run the thing are very confident. I mean, they say over and over again that they're going, you know, they're here till the end, and they're going to pass all of the kind of NFL parameters. So, but I look at it, I've got to put my own feelings aside, right? And I look at it and see a whole bunch of land that still needs to be put together and a bunch of landowners who don't want to sell at a low price, and they see it as their retirement in some cases.
Mm-hmm.
I see a legislature that is in some cases hostile to the state spending money, and actually has sued the governor to stop him from extending bonds, which is how they would pay for parts of it. And that's probably not going to be successful, but even if it, I mean, it might be. What if it is? And then equally, we have another suit in the city over whether or not there'll be a public vote on extending the city's bonds to pay for the new stadium. And, this is all very technical stuff, and forgive me if I'm being confusing here, but there could well be a public vote in the city on whether or not the city will pay for it.
Yeah, well, and that's what it takes to get a stadium done now, though, especially with public financing, right? There's a process that makes sense that you'd have to go through that there.
Yeah, and I'll tell you what, the timeline is what's concerning these guys who are trying to get the stadium through. I think they could get a vote passed in the city. The city has passed more dubious measures than that in the past. The leaders of the city, Mayor Francis Slay and his kind of some of his folks are pretty good at this, vote stuff. And I mean, the mayor's in his, gosh, I'm going to get this wrong, I think he's in his 14th year serving as mayor in the city. And that's a long time. That's a historic time for St. Louis. So, I think it's possible that they could get such a vote passed.
We're on the line with David Hunt. He covers stadium issues for the St. Louis Post-Dispatch, talking about the future of the St. Louis Rams in that town. David, I have read speculation that if, Kroenke moves the Rams, that Maybe somebody else comes to St. Louis. Maybe the Raiders come to St. Louis. Is there anything, is there any serious discussion about that sort of scenario?
Well, there's no serious public discussion about that scenario. The Raiders owner, I've talked to him. He's a nice guy, but he says just outright and repeatedly that he is not moving the Raiders to St. Louis. Now, that again, he has to say that, right? Nobody can say they're moving before they're moving. And that's like a mayor saying he's not running for mayor, or he is running for mayor if he's not. I mean, you just can't say that stuff ahead of time. So, yeah, everybody's talking about that. They all want to see alternate possibilities. The planners for the stadium said several months ago when they first introduced this effort, they said, we are going to try to remain an NFL town. And everybody took notice. It was all perked up. What does that mean, NFL town? Why aren't you saying a Rams town, a Rams city? But they said it several times, and then afterwards everybody asked them about it, and they really backtracked. And I don't know if they got direction from the NFL or if they just realized they needed to say Rams town. But then they said after that, no, we're Rams. We are the Rams is our team, and we're keeping the Rams. But I think even then they knew that one option here is to let Stan go and get another team. What that team is, no idea.
I mean, Jacksonville, right? That would be not a likely candidate, but a possible candidate, wouldn't it?
Well, I think every single team in the country is a possible candidate. Mm. Jacksonville's really interesting because Shad Khan is from Champaign, Illinois, which is a big college town,
sure,
pretty close to St. Louis. And he had bid to buy some of the Rams. And Kroenke actually outbid him. He used his minority status to take the team. So Shad Khan, who owns the Jaguars, could, everybody thinks he's a local boy. He could buy the Rams. I'm not so sure. He is really invested in the Jaguars. He's got a whole huge river or a bay development that he's pushing down there in Jacksonville. I mean, I'm not sure but it is interesting. And on top of that, actually, Mark Lamping, the former Cardinals general manager, is general manager of the Jaguars. So there's some connections that make people think they'd be a good fit. But again, Shad Khan's, I haven't talked to him directly, but his people have said, no, he's not moving. Absolutely not. Same scenario, right? He can't say he's going to move until he's actually going to move, if that ever happens.
I know you've talked to the owners on the committee, the appropriate committees in the NFL, most of them anyway. When you play this thing out, David, what are we looking at? Kroenke continues to build his stadium in Los Angeles, and the people in St. Louis, the state and the city of St. Louis, let's say they go ahead and put plans together and start to erect a stadium in St. Louis. What do you think NFL owners do in that case? They've got one of their own who's heavily invested in L.A., and they've got a market which probably won't meet the criterion, their own criteria for moving.
Yeah. So, first off, let's just clarify a quick point. St. Louis can't build the stadium without an owner. So if there's not an owner at the table, it's not going to happen because they require $400 and $450 million from the owner.
Right.
Plus an NFL loan, which would only go to the owner. So,
but can they force Kroenke to accept that deal if there's a stadium in the works in St. Louis?
Yeah, I think they can.
Really?
I mean, I think that's what people are betting on here, at least. And people who know a lot more about it than anybody outside of the system. I mean, these are guys like Dave Peacock is an Anheuser-Busch, former Anheuser-Busch executive who's dealt with the NFL over his career. You know, Anheuser-Busch is obviously a huge sponsor of NFL games. So, I mean, these are guys who know the NFL, who know a lot more than I do, and they say they can force the NFL, not force, but persuade the NFL that moving a team out of St. Louis is foolish and really anathema to good fan, support of the NFL. So I think that's exactly what they'll try to do, is say, we've got everything lined up, we're ready to build the stadium. If you move a team from us, you're removing a team from a city who's willing to build a new stadium. The team, can you do that? That's their argument.
It's like a game of chicken.
Yeah, there's some chicken involved. There's some chicken involved in a lot of ways.
Yeah,
I mean, you think about San Diego and Oakland trying to move to Carson.
Yeah,
that's definitely chicken. Who's going to blink first?
Yeah. Well, you may ask yourself, David, why do we care in Buffalo? I'll tell you why. A year ago, if this had happened, if the league was, if stuff was moving forward in Los Angeles, a year ago, Buffalo would be at the top of the list. Not St. Louis, not the Chargers, not the Raiders, but the Buffalo Bills would probably be the prime candidates to move to Los Angeles, but for the intervention of the new owners here, which makes us, me in particular, extremely interested in how this plays out.
Yeah, yeah, I know. There's a lot of teams like you guys. I mean, look at Minnesota.
Yeah.
You know, and there's going to be more. I mean, this is a that's why the NFL is watching this so closely. This is a test case. If St. Louis comes forward with the stadium and puts it all together and everything's in place and the NFL still lets a team leave, what are people like Buffalo going to think next time? And what does that do for the next time this happens? That's a big deal.
It is a big deal. We thank you for coming on the air tonight with us and talking about it, David.
Happily. Okay. Thank you for having me. Call anytime.
Okay. David Hunt covers the stadium issues for the St. Louis Post-Dispatch. They are moving ahead with their plans to build a stadium in St. Louis, and the owner, Stan Kroenke, moving ahead with his plans. He's already building a stadium in Los Angeles on the old near the old L.A. Forum, the Hollywood Park racetrack site. Pretty amazing. Something to keep an eye on in the weeks and months ahead. David, I'm joined us via the Subway Fresh Take Hotline, Subway Eat Fresh. Coming up next, a look at what we'll talk with our next guest about the relocation to L.A. issues, but some other on-field issues as well. He is Will Brinson, and he covers the league for CBSSports.com. He'll be on the line with us next, the John Murphy Show, presented by NOCO on Buffalo Bills Radio.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show on Buffalo Bills Radio. And now, the Subway Fresh Take Hotline. Subway, eat fresh.
Just got done talking about the St. Louis issue, the Rams issue with David Hunt, and we thank him again for joining us. Let's get another take on this, another NFL issues. One of the most astute observers of what's going on in the NFL on the Subway Fresh Take Hotline with us right now, senior NFL writer for CBSSports.com, Will Brinson, on the line with us. Will, thanks for being on the air with us. We really appreciate it.
Yeah, John, thanks for having me. Hope you're doing well.
Yeah, we're doing okay. We just got off the phone with a reporter from the St. Louis Post-Dispatch just to get an update on the Rams situation. And I have to confess, Will, I don't see how this is going to play out with their stadium construction in from Kroenke in Los Angeles. The folks in St. Louis are moving pretty quickly to get a stadium done there. How's this all going to shake out, and especially with the Raiders and the Chargers looking in the background? What do you think is going to happen here?
I mean, honestly, John, I think we're going to see the Rams, or at least, you know, Stan Kroenke's team, whatever they may be called, move to Los Angeles. I mean, you have a guy that appears to be really dedicated to the idea of taking football to Los Angeles. You know, he has the means, he has the wherewithal, he has the stadium ground. You know, I think, and he has, you know, he has the money.
Yeah.
Billionaires don't get told no a lot for good reason. They have lots of money. My guess is that what the Rams are doing, or what St. Louis is doing here, not necessarily the Rams, but the city of St. Louis, is making sure that if and when they lose their team, and, you know, they might not, because it's possible that the Raiders and Chargers end up winning the quote-unquote race to L.A., but if and when they do lose the team, that it's clear that they've done their due diligence to try to keep that team, and that they would be at the top of the list for a potential replacement franchise should they ultimately end up, you know, not having a football team. I mean, that's my best guess.
Yeah.
I think it's still very much up in the air, though, in terms of who actually ends up going to L.A., but it seems like Stan Kroenke is determined to take his team right now.
Hey, well, the timing of this is fascinating for those of us here in Buffalo. I mean, we're a year removed from the Bills ownership issue being in question. Now it's settled, and they, you know, by virtue of what the owners have said, the new owners, they're here to stay. Why the sudden push this year to get team or teams in L.A.? What and how lucky are Buffalo Bills fans that it didn't happen a year ago?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, but well, I don't necessarily think that, you know, it's not like Bills fans were necessarily, you know, not like the Bills were necessarily, you know, the you know, like the prime team to go. I mean, I think ultimately the league loves Buffalo and it wants a team in Buffalo. The question was, who is going to be in position to best move a franchise into this huge market and position the NFL to succeed in a return to L.A.? And, you know, I think that's what it boils down to. I don't believe that the ownership, you know, the ownership group in the NFL would allow someone to buy a team and just move into L.A. just because they can move into L.A. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, the NFL is it likes to get money. We know that. They're very good at getting money, but they're also, you know, they do a diligent job of going through the processes involved in making sure that, that things will work. And I think that this office and, you know, Commissioner Goodell and the ownership groups want to ensure that, that you know, they don't rush some team to L.A., but I think that they've determined there's enough interest in that, that move now. You know, they want a team there, clearly, and that, you know, they want to be able to move a team that will be in a, in good shape to function properly once they get there. So, you know, it, Bills fans, certainly. I mean, you're glad that it played out the way it did because it could have been much worse, but I don't know that, you know, it would have taken a really strong ownership group that wanted to move to L.A. and that, that fit with what the NFL wanted to do in order to make that happen, I think.
Hmm. Well, the Subway Fresh Take Hotline with Will Brinson, senior NFL writer for CBSSports.com. I saw that you took notice of Rex Ryan's visit to New York last week, in which he said, I think we'll be in the playoffs this year. You kind of, I read what you wrote about that. Well, for you, it was kind of like, yeah, what else do you expect Rex Ryan to say, huh?
Yeah. I mean, this is I am so thrilled to have Rex Ryan back in our lives. I mean, like fun Rex back in our lives, because it was, you know, the last 2 years, at least the last year in New York, certainly, it was kind of depressing to see Rex, you know, with a little swagger out of his system, mainly because, you know, it was kind of fait accompli in terms of how his run with the Jets was going to end up, and to see him rejuvenated by ownership and management in Buffalo and being given kind of the authority to swing his sword in the fashion that he likes to swing it. It's been fun to watch, man. I can't lie. And you know, I think for Rex, it's such a catch-22. We're very hypocritical sometimes when we talk about athletes and coaches, because we like to, you know, we like to criticize coaches and athletes for being boring and saying generic terms, and then we also criticize, you know, when they criticize athletes and coaches when they go out on a limb. And I think that's what makes Rex so much fun, is that he's willing to, you know, go out on a limb. And for him, this is like a thick tree trunk. He wasn't even climbing that far out there just to say he thinks he'll make the playoffs. He genuinely believes that. In the same way that every quarterback has to genuinely believe that they're a top 10 quarterback, or, you know, the best quarterback in the league. I mean, it's just part of the game. So I like that Rex isn't coming out swinging with Super Bowls, but he is saying, you know, we're probably going to make the playoffs, and he understands how reporters are going to run with it.
Yeah. Speaking of quarterbacks, last week Cam Newton made news with his contract extension, $113 million, $67 million guaranteed. You wrote and said, and a couple of things I've said, that the question of whether Cam Newton is worth it is really not the question, is it? It's not a question of is Cam Newton worth it. It's what's a quarterback worth in the NFL these days?
Yeah, and I mean, to be perfectly frank, I think Cam Newton's worth it. He's like 26. He hadn't even hit his athletic prime yet. And, you know, Cam got in a bunch of, not hot water, but he caught a bunch of flack for saying that the league has never seen a person with his, you know, combination of athletic talent in its history. And while it came off as perhaps kind of arrogant, the reality is it's the truth. I mean, you know, yeah. I've never seen a person play quarterback that had his combination of size and speed and skills. And I really think that he's capable of taking his game to the next level. Paying a quarterback to me is a no-brainer. I mean, if you have a guy like Cam Newton, who is clearly a top 15 quarterback, if not a, you know, close to the top 10, I mean, he's in the top 12, you got to pay him, because your option, you know, it stinks having a huge, you know, cap hold when you got a top 15 quarterback, but it doesn't stink nearly as much as getting fired because you have a bottom 15 quarterback. And that's the reality, is quarterbacks are never going to be let go. And I think Cam's agents, you know, working with the Panthers, they saw that this is going to, you know, take up most of his prime, this contract. They wanted to get fair market value, and they understood that with Andrew Luck and Russell Wilson, Phillip Rivers, Eli Manning, those contracts coming up, that eventually Cam's deal is not going to be a top five, or, you know, it might not be a top five deal, and they had to make sure it was a, you know, a top end of the line deal this time around in order to ensure that he was fairly compensated for the next 5 years or so.
Yeah, you mentioned Russell Wilson, and I read a story that Peter King posted the other day about Russell Wilson, and it sounds like he anticipates trouble in a difficult negotiation between the Seahawks and Russell Wilson. What do you think, Will?
Yeah, I think it could be ugly. I mean, you know, Russell, did that include the part about NC State? I know Peter wrote about
that. Yes, yeah.
Yeah, and I was living in Raleigh when that happened.
Yeah, how he left, right, when he felt dissed, essentially, right, down in NC State?
Yeah, I mean, basically, you know, Tom O'Brien had to make a decision. Did he want to gamble that Russell would come back for a – for one more year, or did he want to go with Mike Glennon, who, you know, is an NFL caliber quarterback that Tom O'Brien had recruited? It's a whole thing. I mean, everybody was in the wrong and everybody was in the right. And unfortunately for Tom O'Brien, he didn't win enough games, and Russell Wilson ended up being a Super Bowl winning quarterback. So it backfired badly. But with Russell's contract, I think the big problem is you've got this situation where you have a quarterback that isn't necessarily carrying an offense, but is also a quarterback who has won a Super Bowl and a quarterback who helped put the Seahawks over the top. Now, granted, they were able to succeed in large part because they didn't have a huge quarterback cap hold and were able to build a roster that way. He's going to want to be paid like a top five quarterback, especially given the fact that he spent the last 3 or 4 years, by the time he gets paid, not getting a ton of money. And it could ultimately come down to an issue of structure and how much they want to pay him. And I think this Cam Newton deal, at least for the Seahawks and those negotiations, is going to be a big problem, because if you're Russell Wilson and you've won a Super Bowl and you've been to the highest level, within your first 3 or 4 years, you've been to the highest level that the NFL has to offer, how can you possibly accept less than what Cam Newton got?
Yeah.
And I think it could become tenuous.
Hey, well, it seems to me in the last couple of weeks, ever since Adrian, I guess it's only a week now, ever since Adrian Peterson returned to the Minnesota Vikings, and Mike Zimmer got plenty of credit for the way he managed that, but now all of a sudden people are talking about the Vikings like they're a serious playoff threat. How do you see that, especially with Teddy Bridgewater in his second year?
Yeah, I like him a lot as a playoff sleeper. You start to look at Teddy Bridgewater, who completed 72% of his passes in December last year. I mean, he played really well down the stretch. Cordarrelle Patterson can't possibly be worse next year. Charles Johnson was an underrated receiver. Jarius Wright gives him speed. Mike Wallace, I didn't love with the signing from Miami, but I like the idea of him improving Minnesota's receiving core. Peter AP carrying the load. We've seen him put a Christian Ponder-led team on his back and take him to the playoffs before, and that was coming off an ACL injury. So we know he can do damage in the run game, obviously. Defensively, if you start to look up and down that defense, I mean, they're loaded. They've got a lot of talent there, whether it's these guys that have been acquired, really, by Rick Spielman. You got Sharif Floyd and Linval Joseph in the middle, Everson Griffin rushing the passer. You have Xavier Rhodes, who's an underrated young cornerback, coming along. Harrison Smith is an excellent safety. I thought Anthony Barr was a lights-out pass rusher last year, and he was kind of sneaky against the run as well. And so I think you got a ton of young talent on this team. They drafted Trey Waynes. This is a team that – It's funny because Mike Zimmer really, he really only had one option when he ended up deciding, getting a head coaching job. But I think it ended up being really the perfect spot for him, especially in the way that they were building this defense and the type of personnel they have. I think this is a potential top 10 unit next year if Zimmer can coach them up the way he coached up the Bengals defense.
Wow, it's a team to watch. Well, we always enjoy reading your post on CBSSports.com, and we always enjoy talking with you. Thanks very much.
Yeah, thanks, Sean. Take care.
Okay, Will Brinson, senior NFL writer for CBSSports.com, and that's where you can read his posts, and there's video work up there as well, and all kinds of interesting things about Cam Newton and Rex Ryan and the Vikings and Russell Wilson. Thanks to Will Brinson for joining us on the Subway Fresh Take Hotline. Subway, eat fresh. We'll be back to wrap things up, talk a little bit more tomorrow about tomorrow night's show when we return. It is the John Murphy Show from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.
Is the John Murphy Show on Buffalo Bills Radio.
And now, what have we learned from tonight's show?
I learned a lot. I hope you did too. We learned that Bills fans, the ones who phoned in tonight, have a pretty good handle on how their wide receiver depth chart is going to shake out. Most people think Watkins, Woods, and Harvin will be the top three. Questions about Goodwin, Hogan, maybe rounding out the top five, Marcus Easley, a lot of support for his special teams prowess. Desmond Lewis, the seventh rounder, a lot of people feel good about him. Deontay Thompson got a mention tonight, a guy who got a little bit of playing time already in the league with the Baltimore Ravens. So I think it's an interesting mix after the top three at wide receiver for the Bills. I think our guest at 7:30 is part of that mix, Marcus Thigpen, who scored the big punt return touchdown against the Green Bay Packers last December. He's in the mix for one of those last remaining spots on the roster. And when Marcus joined us, we learned that after he was released by the Tampa Bay Bucks last year. He almost called it quits as far as his football career.
Probably going to try to find a job and, you know, just do something where I can be at home and not have to stress and worry where I'm going to be and getting cut. You know, it's just a lot to go into it, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And people don't really understand the sacrifices that we have to make, you know, from our families when we leave. But, you know, I was at a point where I was ready to wrap it up, and my wife told me, you know, just give it one more try. You know, you didn't come this far for no reason, you know, so... You know, I decided to go with it, and it's working out well so far.
Yep, a lot of work to do for Marcus Thigpen, but it has worked out pretty well in here competing, and I mean competing for a job during these OTAs. A little bit ago, we talked with David Hunt, a reporter for the St. Louis Post-Dispatch. The Rams situation I find intriguing. You know, the fact that their owner is out there, without saying anything, building a stadium in Los Angeles, hasn't said a word to the loyal Rams fans back in St. Louis, and the government officials, state and city, in St. Louis and the state of Missouri are moving ahead with their stadium plans. It's a fascinating course of action on both fronts. David Hahn, who covers that story for the St. Louis Post-Dispatch, says he's tried, but he's not been able to get Stan Kroenke, the Rams owner, to talk about it anymore as this process moves forward.
It's maddening for some people.
Yeah.
I mean, people really don't like Stan Kroenke in St. Louis. I mean, if he didn't talk before and that irritated him, now... You know, I mean, he's moving the team without saying that he's moving the team. I mean, it's just very frustrating for Rams lovers. I'll say this, too. I can't believe the number of people who love the Rams, the St. Louis Rams. I mean, I've never had so many people come out of the woodwork and call me and tweet at me and email me and saying how much they love the Rams. They really dig this team, and they really don't like Kroenke. They're really mad at him for leaving or for suggesting he might leave.
David Hunt from the St. Louis Post-Dispatch. And finally, moments ago, Will Brinson from CBSSports.com gave us an overview of league issues, including the fact that he just thinks it's great to have Bills coach Rex Ryan out there and acting up and making brash predictions about the Bills this season.
I am so thrilled to have Rex Ryan back in our lives. I mean, like fun Rex back in our lives, because it was, you know, the last 2 years, at least the last year in New York, certainly, it was kind of depressing to see Rex, you know, with a little swagger out of his system, mainly because, you know, it was kind of fait accompli in terms of how his run with the Jets was going to end up, and to see him rejuvenated by ownership and management in Buffalo and being given kind of the authority to swing his sword in the fashion that he likes to swing it. It's been fun to watch, man. I can't lie.
Will Brinson from CBSSports.com. So that's just a part of what we've learned on tonight's show. I like tonight's show. Hey, you should know this, too. The first three Bills home games this year, no tickets available anymore for the Colts, New England, and the New York Giants games. Season tickets still available for all 10 home games at Ralph Wilson Stadium. But because of the overall demand, high demand for the pre-sale of individual game tickets that was made available to season ticket members the last couple of weeks, the Bills say there are no tickets available for the first three home games, Colts, Patriots, and New York Giants. I think that's pretty good news. Tomorrow night on the show, we're going to talk, we hope, with Sammy Watkins. He's got a camp coming up. We'll get an update from him on OTAs and his recovery from off-season surgical procedures. Chris Sims, whose brother Matt is in camp with the Bills, he'll join us tomorrow night as well. Make sure you're around for that. Want to thank our presenting sponsor, NOCO. Family-owned, locally operated since 1933. Like NOCO on Facebook.com/NOCO for great deals, specials, and more. Our engineer, Mike Jafari, our producer, Jay Harris, Bills director of broadcasting, Jeff Matthews. We're back tomorrow night at 7 with the John Murphy Show from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.